Heichel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 41 in the series, entitled On the Definition of Truth, recorded live at Heichel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning, Tanya Perikid Gimel, 13th chapter, Daf Yitessa Medalla for page 37. 8 lines from the top of the two dots, V'hine Midas Avazu. In the previous classes, we discussed the spiritual personality defined in the Tanya as the Beinoni, the intermediate man, or if you wish, the ordinary man, which is the human being, that despite, notwithstanding the fact that he experiences a constant conflict and battle between the two consciousnesses existing within him, an animalistic, egotistical soul and a divine, transcendental soul, he nevertheless never allows his egotistical consciousness to dominate and control his life, because despite the fact that he does indeed experience cravings, lusts, ambitions that stem from his ego, from his animalistic self, nevertheless, as a result of the deep awareness and recognition what constitutes his true self, which is his divine self, as a result of the awareness and recognition from where these unhealthy, egotistical cravings and lusts are stemming from, he realizes that they are not stemming from his true inner self, but rather from his impulsive animalistic soul. So this recognition secures and creates a mental fortress of integrity that despite the cravings, despite the loss, despite the duality, despite the dichotomy existing within him, he allows only his positive desires and impulses, only his godly ambitions and visions come to fruition in his day-to-day life. However, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the Alter Rebbe, explained in chapter 13, as well as in chapter 12, that despite the fact that generally speaking, the situation, the psychological and mental situation of the Beinoni, of the ordinary man, is dichotomized between two perceptions, two perspectives, two philosophies, two mindsets, two sets of cravings and desires, nevertheless, there are unique times, even in the Beinoni's life, where he becomes, so to speak, a holistic person, where he is not compartmentalized. It's those times where even emotionally, in his heart, he experiences a real love and affection towards Hashem, towards godliness, towards spirituality. At those moments, the truth of godliness is not just an intellectual truism that is etched within his mind, but rather the truth of godliness becomes embedded and it permeates and penetrates even his emotional self. It becomes his lust, his craving. He loves it. What he desires at those moments is nothing but godliness and spirituality. And then at those times, the Alter Rebbe said, he does not experience on a conscious level his nefesh habahamis, his animalistic soul, or its cravings, or its projections, or its manifestations. His entire being, his entire reality, desires one thing and one thing only, godliness. And those are the times of davening, of Kriya Shema, of prayer, and other auspicious times when there is a unique atmosphere, godly energy in the universe. And in addition to that, the Beinoni devotes time for meditation and contemplation. And therefore he reaches a state of mind, a state of heart, where his godly soul pervades his entire personality. And then he doesn't experience a conflict. The only thing he wants intellectually and emotionally is godliness. However, that does not last him. It does not last him for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That he experiences at certain unique times. Following these times, his animal soul wakes up from its slumber, from its sleep. It stretches out it begins yawning and it begins expressing itself. And then the conflict that he experiences on a conscious level is renewed. But his previous experience, the holistic experience of davening, is extremely integral. Because it's the roshim, the impression from that previous experience that he doesn't have presently, which allows him to overcome the battle even when the Nefesh HaBahamas does affect his life on a conscious level. In other words, if the Beinoni would only relate to godliness on an intellectual level, if he would never have a moment where his eye, where his heart, not only his mind, celebrates spirituality and craves to godliness, then later, when the conflict would ensue, when he would experience those two perceptions, not necessarily he would always be able to be victorious. Because the heart is powerful, and the Nefesh HaBahamas' cravings are often overwhelming. However, since every single day, the Beinoni goes through those few moments where godliness becomes a reality on all levels, where he doesn't have a conflict, where the truth of a Likus is not only a mind issue, it's also a heart issue. His heart has Ahavas Hashem, has a burning affection, craving and love towards Hashem. That secures him that even afterwards, when he returns back to the world, so to speak, and he indulges, so to speak, in materialism, and the perception of his ego returns with all its vigor, with all its might, with all its passion, nevertheless, despite the fact that there has been introduced into his life an animalistic, egotistical perception, he will not enslave himself to her. He will not fall prey to these impulsive temptations because his intellectual awareness of what constitutes the truth and his own truth, and as a result of the impression of the love that he experiences previously. Now, the Alter Rebbe will continue and touch upon actually something which is a sensitive issue, which he does not address too often in his writings in generally, and in the Tanya particularly, but nevertheless he touches upon it here, and as we shall see, it's something which is very fundamental in his life's philosophy and perspective. And this is the issue and the question of how true is this holistic experience of the Beinoni by davening. How true is this emotional experience? How true, how internal, how deep is this relationship, emotional, heartfelt relationship that the Beinoni experiences with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Let's learn inside. V'hine, at the two dots. V'hine, midas avazu hamura bebeinim b'shas atfila. This aforementioned love attained by the beinim, by the ordinary men, at the time of prayer, al yidei hisgabrus hanefesh alikis chulu, by virtue of the temporary preponderance of the divine soul over the animal soul, as has been explained earlier, that this is not a perpetual, natural state in the Beinoni's life. Rather, it comes as a result of the Nefesh HaLikis gaining strength and its preponderance over the Nefesh HaBahamas. This love, this state of heart, this state of the Beinoni, Hine Legabe Madregas HaTzadikim, Oivdei Hashem Be'emes Lamitai, when compared to the standard of the Tzadikim, who serve Hashem be'emes la'amitai, which means in the truest manner of truth, in perfect truth, ein b'chines avazu nikras b'shem avodas emes klal. This love is not called true service at all. You cannot define it with the term of avodas emes, of a true avoda whatsoever. Why? Perhaps one might say, why can't you define it as true? Because he's deceiving himself. His feelings are perhaps mere illusions. We all know that there are often human beings who deceive themselves and enter into a state of consciousness where from their own perspective they are experiencing a deep love and affection. But then a few moments pass and that whole overwhelming experience and feeling is gone. It dissipated. And they come to realize that their previous experience was merely an illusion. It was a momentary experience that wasn't true. You have others who are even in a different state. They themselves know that they don't experience any love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But for the sake of their status or reputation, they act perhaps by davening in a way that whoever looks at them, you can think, wow, this person is exploding with love. What's happening inside? Who knows? But we won't suspect the Beinoni thus. We'll say the Beinoni is having fantasies, illusions. He thinks he loves. The spiritual profile, the spiritual personality defined in the Tanya, defined in the Tanya as the Beinoni, is too honest, too deep, too sincere to allow himself this type of superficiality and self-deception. That's not the reason why it's not an Avodas Emes, because the Beinoni is deceiving himself. He's not deceiving himself. He has an Ava. He loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that time. Rather, the Alter Rebbe explains another, totally different reason for this statement, that the Beinoni's Ava is not an Avodas Emes klal. May achar, since, because, shechaylefes vaiveres achar atfilah. Because it passes and disappears after prayer. So what? Uksiv. And it's written in Mishlei, Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Yud Tes, Svas Emes Tikain Laad, Vaad Argia L'shoin Shaker. The language of truth shall be established forever. But the tongue of falsehood is only momentary. If it's Svas Emes, the Pasuk is saying, it's Tikain La'ad. It endures forever, for all of eternity. If it's Va'ad Argia, if it's only till Argia, Argia comes from the word Rega. If it only lasts for the Rega, for the moment, that demonstrates that it's Lashon Sheker, that inherently it's falsehood. Hence, since the Beinoni's Ahava apparently is not Tikkun La'ad, it lasts only for the time of Tefillah, and after Tefillah it's gone, this would supposedly demonstrate that it's not an Avoida of Emes, it cannot be included in the parameters which define truth. Says the Alter Rebbe, yes, this is indeed the case, that relative to the Tzaddik, the Avodah of the Beinoni is not true. But Va'afal Pike, nevertheless, Legabe Madregas HaBeinonim, relative to the rank of the Beinoni, Nikras Avodah Tama, this level of love is regarded as a perfect service, Be'emes La'amitoi Shelohem. In their level, it is the truest manner of truth. You can regard this love that they experience by tefillah or at similar times as a truly perfect service in terms of their level of truth. In terms of their emes la'amitai, what is called their truest truth, this is complete truth. Ish, kifi madregasi b'madregas ha-beinonim. In each man relative to his standing in the category of beinonim. Because as mentioned earlier in the chapter, last week, the rank of the Beinoni is subdivided into myriads and myriads of levels. So each Beinoni, according to his own level, to his own spiritual gradation. V'hareini kere, ba'avasam shabitfilasam gamkein, svas emes tikin la'at. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, I term the love that they experience during their prayer as something which is part of Svas Emes, as the language of truth, which shall be established forever. Why? Since their divine soul has the power To reawaken this love constantly. Whenever it gathers strength during prayer, day after day, by means of the spiritual preparation appropriate to each soul, according to its quality and rank. So since the Beinoni, every type of Beinoni, has the ability of reawakening and tapping in to this love experience every day, each person according to his rank, through proper preparation, therefore I deem, I term this Ahava not as something which is ultimately false, but something which is a true experience. Relative to the Beinoni, it's Emes La'amita, it's the truest level of truth. And it can be included in the statement of the Pasuk, Svas Emes Tikinlat. If he's saying that the hachana, the preparation, is more important than the tefillah itself, no, I don't think he's saying that. He's saying that through the hachana, through the preparation, they have the ability to experience it every day. And therefore, although it doesn't last after davening, it's emes.
What does he mean by mental preparation? Does it mean meditation?
What does he mean by mental preparation? It means primarily meditation and contemplation. Yes.
A Beinoni has to do the preparation, but a tzaddik doesn't even have to prepare to experience the love.
A Beinoni has to do the preparation, but a tzaddik doesn't even have to prepare to experience the love. That's correct. He had to prepare for many years, what? To get rid of the nefesh ha-Bahamas. That he didn't just wake up one morning, hey, I love you, God. Yeah? Oh, no, yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Right.
We're concerned about what happens during the day, not after one day to the next day. During the day, does he have the
time? Okay. All three questions are very good questions. Question number A, why is the Pasuk Svas Emes Tikin Lad relevant here? Svas Emes means the language of truth. Over here we're talking about davening, which is an internal, emotional, soul experience, Avodah Shebelev. Svas Emes literally means the language of truth, but it's very relevant here, because the language of truth doesn't only mean when you're talking words. How do we know the words are truthful if they're established forever? What the Pasuk is saying is, what is the language of truth? Language in a much more general connotation. The general idea of truth is something that's tikkun lat, so therefore it relates here. Question number two you asked, why is it relevant to emphasize that relative to the tzaddik it's untrue? We're talking about the Beinoni. I'll explain that in a moment. And question number three, the Alter Rebbe seems to be contradicting himself. First he says that Ein b'chinas avuzu nikras b'shem avaydas emes kol. It's not emes. Why? Because after davening, it's gone. Then he says that since they experience it every day by davening, it's emes. So what was his initial? What was his havamina? What did he think initially? He's talking not about the time of prayer. He's talking about the time after prayer. And the time after prayer, it's gone. So what does it help that tomorrow by prayer is going to be reintroduced? It's not emes. During that, the fact that it's not there throughout the whole day demonstrates apparently that it's not emes. What is the definition of truth? What is the definition of the word emes? On the most basic level, how do we define emes? If it's not an outright lie. If you say that 10:25 Sunday morning, Pesach Sheni Tavshinun Ches, you were not on 16th Avenue and 45th Street, you were somewhere else. It's an outright lie. If you say you were here presently at this time when someone asks you, that's emes. The fact is that everyone that's here is presently here. But in this pasuk in Mishle, the Torah gives us another definition, a deeper definition for truth. Svas emes tikein la'ad va'ad argia l'shain shaker. Which means the test, the signal, the sign that validates, that determines that something is true, is eternity. Tikoin la'ad, if it's forever. The sign that demonstrates that something is untrue is shekers, if it's not eternal, if it's temporary. Because emes, in its real definition, doesn't only mean that something exists. It also determines the nature of its existence. How does it exist? Does it exist inherently or does it exist only circumstantially? For example, if we say about a certain person that he's fighting for a specific cause with an emes, he's fighting for a specific concept, for a specific cause with truth. What do we mean? What do we mean he's fighting for it with emes? That he's doing something about it. That would mean he's fighting with emes. He's fighting for it. No, that's not what it means he's fighting for emes. Fighting for it with emes means that he is really connected to the cause he is involved in. He is not doing it for external reasons, for external pressures, for outside circumstances that have been introduced into his life. He really, truly cares about it. What is the Evan HaBoichen? What is the measure? What is the yard, the measurement yard through which we can determine if this is the case? The longevity of his involvement. If today he's fighting for it, and tomorrow he stops fighting for it, what does it prove? That even today, he was not truly involved in this endeavor. Because if tomorrow he ceases to get involved in it, why? Because someone pays him off, someone buys him off, someone gives him money to stop fighting for it, what does it prove? It proves that even today he didn't care about the cause, he cared about money. But today, he wasn't bought off, so he fought for it. Tomorrow he is bought off, so he was given money for it. So he stops doing it. Or in another case, or another example, a person, he's not bought off. It's just that tomorrow, or next month, a lot of pressures begin building up against him, and as a result of the pressures, he stops doing it, he stops fighting for it, it's too difficult. What does it show? It shows that it's not inherent within him. If this would be who he is, so under all circumstances, in all conditions, he would be fighting for it. The fact that tomorrow, or in a week, or in a month, he can change his involvement, he can alter his opinions, he can alter the course of action as a result of pressure, as a result of very difficult circumstances, demonstrates that his connection with it, even yesterday, when he was totally involved in it, was not an inherent one. It was ultimately a circumstantial one. It was ultimately an external one. And this means that it's not emes. He is not fighting for it with an emes. The same is true. You say, someone is attached to this with an emes. He means it with an emes. Er meint es mit an emes. What does it mean, er meint es mit an emes? That this is his opinion? No. That this is going to be his opinion tomorrow and aftermorrow. If tomorrow he changes his opinion, it means today it wasn't emes. He felt so because of this reason, that reason, but that's not who he is. One second. Another example to see what that the emes has a deeper definition than we usually are tempted to define it. In our era, it is a very common thing that people fall into depression and melancholiness. And one of the most common methods they use, unfortunately, to alleviate, to get rid of this depression, is alcohol and drugs. These two elements introduce into a person's life a instantaneous high, and at that moment he rids himself from his pressures, his concerns, his dilemmas, and his problems, and he feels joyous and happy. This high that he's experiencing is emes or sheker. It's true or false. If we define emes as the very simple fact that it's not sheker, that it is and it's not not, it's a true high. He's on a high. He's happy. But that's not what emes means. Svas emes tikein la'ad. Is this high going to continue in 6 hours? In a day? If anything, for a few hours. Why? Why? Because even when he had the high, it was an artificial high. It didn't permeate him. It didn't penetrate him. Could you say he is really happy? He is really on a high? No. The high has been induced. It has been imposed by external forces. It has not permeated his psyche, his character. Emes means not only that it's there. Emes means what? It's really there. When you are on a high, it means that you are on a high. You are joyous. The joy is connected with you. When you induce joy or easiness or happiness by external methods, it never touched you. Initially it was artificial. Even when you were on a high, you weren't on a high. It's not an emes high. When the drug is there, it works. When the drug is gone, it's gone. So tikein la'ad establishes that it's inherent. It's not circumstantial. Indeed, unfortunately, many youngsters or even adults don't grasp this. They say, mele drugs that, or alcohol that destroy your body, that fry your brain, fine, they won't take. But those that supposedly are not so harmful physically, what's wrong? The problem is not only the physical illnesses and so on and so forth. The problem is inherently it's a false thing. You're trying to find a solution to something, and you're employing the wrong methods. These methods are inherently false. Their whole power is external, and they do not penetrate, do not affect a real change in a person's life. One more example for this definition of emes. Because they're temporary. But what does temporariness show? It's not just because they're temporary. So they're temporary. Who cares? The fact that it's temporary shows that even when it's there, it's not there. If it would be there, if you are joyous, so what happens a day later? The you is gone? If that's who you are, if that affects you, so what happens tomorrow? The fact that today it's like this, and tomorrow is like this, shows that even when it's there, it wasn't an emesdike connection. It was a super external one. However, we are often external people, and we fall prey to externalities. Because instant gratification is a powerful temptation, and a person has pressures, has problems. Let me get rid of it. Ay, chachem. Tomorrow you're going to have the same thing, and you'll get even more depressed. Because after you see the solution didn't work, you get even more depressed. So what's the chachma? Why are you taking a Tylenol? Deal with the issue. Deal with the root of the issue. But it's much easier that way. It's much easier, but it's living in a very superficial way. That's not emes. In scientific experiments, one second, scientific experiments, this is also a very important issue. A scientific truth, if it's a truth, can be established only on the basis of repetition. If a scientist or a person does a certain experiment and it brings certain results, that cannot be established as a truth, a scientific truth. Why? It's very possible it's an isolated phenomenon. How do you establish that a certain thing works? You have to try it again and again and again, and every time you have to try it in other circumstances. When it passes the test of different atmospheres, different circumstances, different modes, different models, and nevertheless it still retains that attribute, that faculty, then you know it's true. Then you know it's emes. It worked today, so today it's emes. No, it could be the reason it worked today was because there was a certain circumstance that was existing, and as a result of that, it brought these results. But this issue does not really produce these types of results. It's interesting that this definition of emes, the Alter Rebbe explains elsewhere, has made its way into the very definition of emes in the Hebrew language. The Alter Rebbe writes in the Likutei Torah Parshas Matos that in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh, which is a holy language, and every word is meticulous, there is a word known used in Tanakh as Nachal Kozev. Nachal Kozev means a false river. What does a false river mean? A river whose water dries up is called a false river. For example, in Yeshaya, Perik Nun Ches Pasuk Aleph, there's a pasuk V'ha'yisa kegane rava, u'chemoitza mayim asher lo yechazvu meimav. You will be like a well-watered garden, and a spring of water whose waters never fail. Lo yechazvu meimav. Yechazvu literally means falsehood. Its waters never lie. The fact that the water never fails means that the water doesn't lie. And this has a very interesting halachic implication. Concerning the elements that are used to purify a person who's tamei, who has become defiled as a result of contact with a corpse, the primary elements that are used to purify him are ashes that are taken from a burnt red cow, and spring water, which is mixed with these ashes. They mix the ashes in the water, and then this ash water is sprinkled upon the contaminated person or vessels. The Mishnah, Masechta Para, discusses which type of spring water is kosher, can be used for meichatas, for this water that will purify a contaminated person. So the Mishnah says, and I quote, Hamayim hamechazvim psulim, false water apostle, are disqualified. Eluhem hamayim hamechazvim. What do we mean by mayim hamechazvim? Hamechazvim echad b'shavua. Water, a spring, a well, that dries up once in 7 years. The Teferis Yisrael explains that there are certain rivers in the world that they exist, the water exists, but then from time to time, periodically, the water is swallowed in within the earth. Within the earth, and then they usually bring animals there, and the animals graze and hang around. Then the water re-emerges, gushes out, and again pervades the space of the spring or of the river. The Teferis Yisrael writes, V'chein Matzui b'Shweiz, that in Switzerland there are such rivers. So, this is the scenario, the Mishnah is saying. We want to take water from a spring to mix it with ashes to be able to purify a contaminated person. You come to a river, a well, it's gushing with water. I'm a chaya. It's live, fresh, beautiful water. But you know that in 2 years, or in 6 years, it's going to disappear. Zog the Mishnah, this is false water. It's mayim hamechazvim, and you cannot use it. It doesn't have a real definition of meimayim, of mayim chayim. Why? Why is it? Because this is not really a place of water. The relationship between the water and this territory is circumstantial. It's not inherent. How do you know it's circumstantial? Because tomorrow it might not be there. If the water is connected intrinsically to this place, if this is an emesis spring, and an emesis spring means what? That the territorial earth is connected to the water versus a place of earth which is not a water container. And this relationship is intrinsic and inherent. So what happens in a year? Why should it change? The fact that in 2 years or in 6 years it might change demonstrates that even today it's a circumstantial relationship. There are outside causes that are causing the water to be here. And this is called mayim hamechazvim, false water. Therefore, parenthetically, the conclusion of the Mishnah is that if the water dries up, not as a result of the natural course of events, but rather because legions, armies, come and utilize the water for their needs, and as a result of that, they dry the well, they consume all of the water, and they destroy the source, they destroy the spring, or it's a result of drought, then it's taka kosher. Why? Because then the water is disappearing as a result of external reasons. It's not that naturally the water is gone. Naturally the water would drink. An external force has been imposed and robbed this place from water. So then it would taka be kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's possible, but Allah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The bottom line is, emes is identical with eternity. If something is not consistently true at every time, in every fashion, in every manner, in every proportion, it's not emes. And indeed, Alter Rebbe writes elsewhere, this is indicated in the very word emes. Emes consists of three letters. Aleph, Mem, and Tuf. Aleph is the first letter of the Aleph base. Mem is the middle letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and Tuf is the last letter. Because the quality of emes is that from beginning through the middle till the end. If it only exists in the realm of Aleph, or in the realm of mem, it doesn't penetrate and extend itself through the dove, it means that even in the aleph and the mem, it's also not emes. Because its relationship to the aleph and the mem is not an inherent one. If it would be an inherent one, it would be in tough also. It would be in all situations, in all proportions. Now let's get back to the Beinoni. The question is, why does Shlomo HaMelech use the term Svas Emes rather than Emes Lamitay? Svas Emes would mean the lip of truth, the Svas of truth, the edge of truth, rather than Emes Lamitay. We'll see in a moment. It will be explained in a moment. Let's get back to the Beinoni. The Beinoni, by davening, or at other unique times, auspicious times, experiences Ahavas Hashem, a love towards the Almighty. At that moment, he truly loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and his entire being, his complete consciousness, shouts, I love spirituality, I desire godliness, I want to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At those moments, there is no battle, there is no conflict, there is no duality, there is an holistic individual, a non-compartmentalized person who is not experiencing, as in other times of his life, two souls, two perceptions. Rather, godliness, spirituality, his divine soul pervades his entire persona. It's true not only in his mind, it's true in his heart, it's true not only in his intellectual self, it's true in his emotional self. It's not only an abstract ideal, it's an intimate emotional sense and feeling and experience. But what happens after davening? What happens after davening to the Beinoni? This is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. His nefesh Bahamas, his animal, materialistic, egotistical, earthly, selfish perception reawakens and reasserts itself in his life with all its might and strength. So apparently, in light of the above definition, his emotional experience by davening can by no means enter the parameter of emes. It's sheker. Why? Not because he defooled himself, not because he deceives himself. Because can we really say that the Beinoni loves Hashem? That the experience of Hashem's love was inherent? If it was inherent, if that's who he really is, so what happens after davening? He disappeared. The he is still there after davening, and the love of Hashem is gone. On the contrary, a love towards worldliness asserts itself. A love towards something which might be very animalistic and immoral takes over his life. He doesn't allow that love to control him. But Avos Hashem is gone. So what does it demonstrate? It demonstrates that even by davening, it wasn't emes. It was, so to speak, induced. By a tzaddik, and here we come to your question, by a tzaddik. By a tzaddik, his Avos emes. How do you know his Avos emes? He needs davening to have Avos Hashem. A tzaddik, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, his heart is on fire with a love towards Hashem. You know how we can understand a tzaddik, I'll tell you. Our relationship to Olam Hazeh is the relationship of a tzaddik to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Do you have to contemplate before you want to develop a love towards this world's pleasures? Tell me, if you're going to sit down tonight for supper, you're going to go to a Chinese restaurant, and they're going to offer, you're starving, you didn't eat a whole day, theoretically, yeah? And they offer a delicious dish of Szechuan beef with fried rice, whatever. And it looks beautiful. And the odor is extraordinary. And the taste is very compelling. Do you have to sit down? Hey, let me contemplate that this is good. You have to meditate and contemplate. And that meditation will create and develop within you a love and affection towards the beef. It doesn't happen that way. You don't have to contemplate. You don't have to meditate. Naturally, you gravitate. You have to restrain yourself to eat like a mensch if you're starving. That's what has to happen. You have to contemplate the other way. By a tzaddik, that same relationship he has to godliness. Why? Because by us, the nefesh HaBahamas, the animalistic soul, is at the forefront of our consciousness. And the nefesh HaBahamas, materialism, is what it gravitates to. It's animalistic, it's not transcendental. By the tzaddik, the only consciousness exists within him is nefesh HaLikis. So the he is gravitates inherently, internally and eternally, therefore, towards godliness. So by the tzaddik, we understand that it's emes. But by the Beinoni who experiences after davening that natural craving towards Elam Hazeh, towards physicality, towards the mundane reality, apparently it demonstrates that davening was a unique high, it was a unique experience. But was it emes? Was it internal? Was it inherent? They tell the story about Rabbi Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, known as the Beis Halevi. He authored his farm Beis Halevi. He was the rabbi of Brisk, and prior Brisk, a Lithuanian famous Jewish city, and prior to that, the rabbi of a city called Slutsk. And once, a few, so to speak, as they call them, Chredishe Yidden, ultra-Orthodox Jews, came into Rabbi Yosher Ber, and they began lamenting about the great success that the Maskilim are having in the city.